WMRA News. I'm Bob Levakin. The neo-Nazi who killed Heather Heyer gets life plus 419 years in his state conviction. Virginia's rural population is declining. That's a trend expected to increase in coming years. We'll take a look. And we also meet some of the scientists at NASA's Langley facility in Virginia who were part of the effort to put men on the moon for the first time 50 years ago. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, July 16th. James Alex Fields Jr. was sentenced Monday to life in prison plus 419 years on state charges for killing Heather Heyer and injuring dozens of others in August 2017. Fields' lawyers claimed the neo-Nazi was trying to escape an angry crowd when he drove into the counter-protesters following the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville 2 years ago. Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Breaux, said she was relieved and ready to move on with her life. She hopes Fields will abandon his racist beliefs. But in court, she saw no sign of that.
I did not see any remorse. I'm not sure with his mental illness if he is capable of remorse.
Another victim, Marcus Martin, demanded that Fields look him in the eyes, but Fields looked down. Last month, Fields was sentenced to life in prison on 29 federal hate crime charges. A federal judge has dismissed a civil lawsuit against the Culpeper County Sheriff over his treatment of one immigrant detainee. The Daily Progress reports the Legal Aid Justice Center filed the lawsuit last year against Sheriff Scott Jenkins for holding an immigrant in the local jail beyond his release date. The judge in the case ruled Monday that Jenkins did not violate federal law in holding Francisco Guardado Rios 2 days beyond his scheduled release date. The judge said the sheriff was acting lawfully in cooperating with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Rios was arrested in August 2017 in Culpeper County for driving without a license and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. ICE notified the jail that it believed Rios was undocumented. A man protesting the Mountain Valley Pipeline is accused of assaulting a pipeline employee. The Roanoke Times reports 46-year-old Jamie Hale was arrested Monday and charged with assault. The state police said troopers were called to a construction site just west of Roanoke and found more than a dozen protesters blocking access to the site. Hale says he was at the protest when he recognized a member of Mountain Valley's security firm, Global Security Corporation. From a confrontation in September, Hale confronted the worker again and the encounter escalated. Hale posted bail and was released from custody. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice and his family have donated 4,500 acres near Charlottesville for a conservation easement to save the site from development. The James C. Justice Companies announced that the donation of presidential estates by the Justice family forfeits hundreds of development rights and ensures the property will remain available as timberland and for agriculture. In 2018, the Virginia Department of Forestry ranked more than 2,600 acres of the property, more than half of it, as having high or very high forest conservation value. The property also contains significant aquatic habitat and public drinking water supplies. Presidential Estates is just outside of downtown Charlottesville and includes a view of Monticello. The Virginia retirement system serves more than 700,000 Virginians. It is beating benchmarks and cutting costs. But according to a report presented to lawmakers on Monday, not all of its members are benefiting. From partner station WCVE, Ben Pavier reports.
In 2014, the Virginia retirement system switched new employees to a new plan to help save the state money. It works best for employees when they set aside a chunk of each paycheck towards retirement. But almost half of state employees on the new plan are putting aside less than 1%. That could mean the piggy bank will run dry faster when these younger employees, many of them teachers, hit retirement age. Trish Bishop heads VRS.
Our challenge is really getting them hooked and on board into doing that voluntary savings.
The state could decide to bump up the automatic amount that employees set aside, but that comes with a price tag. The good news is that people who are contributing are seeing higher than expected returns.
Now that's Ben Pavier from WCVE reporting. Meanwhile, the population in many parts of Virginia is declining, a trend that is only expected to increase in the coming years, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Danville currently has a population of about 40,000 people. By 2030, the folks at the University of Virginia estimate it'll have 35,000. Then by 2040, it'll be down to 30,000. That's a 25% decline in Danville's population over the next two decades.
The rural communities are witnessing a decline.
That's Shonel Sen at the Weldon Cooper Center at UVA, which recently issued a 20-year forecast for Virginia cities and counties. She says in the next few years, more than 70% of Virginia's population will be living in the three largest metropolitan areas.
And only 12% of Virginians will be living in the non-metro area. So this is quite a stark contrast between the rural and the urban sections and regions of the state.
Places like Loudoun and Prince William are booming, but Mark Mather at the Population Reference Bureau says places that aren't booming are caught in a kind of downward spiral, where people move away so businesses won't locate there, which means more people leave.
And so people aren't moving in because of the lack of jobs and businesses aren't locating there, so it tends to spiral downward until the population just keeps declining, and it can be very hard to reverse that once it's started.
That downward spiral is hitting places like Danville and Martinsville hardest, rural parts of Virginia where Mather says a lack of young people is causing dwindling tax revenue, limited options for health care, and declining school enrollment. I'm Michael Pope.
Finally today, 50 years ago on this day, a giant Saturn V rocket blasted off from the Kennedy Space Center, carrying three American astronauts to the first landing of humans on the moon. WCVE's Charles Fishburne traveled to NASA Langley to speak with scientists who worked on the Apollo 11 mission.
60 seconds. Lights on.
NASA Langley developed the system that mapped the moon and picked the place to land.
40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust.
And when it came time, Al Ragsdale was copying these very signals from the Apollo 11 astronauts.
Four forward, drifting to the right a little.
I was writing on this piece of paper when they landed on the moon.
The Eagle has landed.
He was the Lunar Module Landing Simulator Engineer, and his job was to do all the pre-flight checks on the simulator at Langley and go through the routine before the astronauts came in for their training.
Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, all the people that landed on the moon trained on that simulator.
It's amazing to think that it's been 50 years, almost 50 years, since the Apollo 11 astronauts set foot on the moon.
Rob Wyman is media chief at NASA Langley.
They did all of their training right here.
Wyman stands by the giant gantry where the astronauts trained.
They would hang the lunar excursion module, a mock-up of the spacecraft that the astronauts were going to land on the moon, they would hang it on cables and simulate landing and where to land and how to land.
25 years old at the time, Ragsdale worked closely with the astronauts.
I would come in at 4 o'clock in the morning and check out anything that needed to be checked out and make sure whatever they were going to do that day would work.
At a nearby hangar, the astronauts practiced docking in space. The engineer whose job it was to perfect a television system to make that possible was Sheila Thibault, a physics major just out of college.
If something went wrong, we would lose two astronauts.
Coming back from the moon, looking to dock with the command module, the astronauts could not see where they were going without that television.
That's the part that I worked on, and we tweaked the parameters on the television monitor as best we could to be able to maximize the resolution that they would be able to see.
Both the hangar and the gantry are still in use and ready for the next mission.
It's an exciting time for us here at NASA Langley.
Debbie Tomac is Deputy Director for Langley's Space Technology and Exploration Directorate.
We have been involved in everything from the moon landing all the way back in the 60s, all the way up through the space shuttle program, up until current time frame. What we're focused on right now is this Lunar 2024 push, which is exciting for us.
They are testing Orion, the next space capsule. They're learning how to use robots to assemble components in space. They're experimenting with better ways to land and to protect equipment on the moon's surface and on Mars.
Our mission is very different. We're not going to the moon just for a quick trip to plant a flag and to leave some footprints and to come back. This time we're going to the moon to have a sustainable presence, a long-term presence on the surface.
Ragsdale and Thibault are now 75 and still working and ready to do it again. He is writing math models for vertical landings on Earth and in space. And she is working on radiation shielding and is designing new fabrics for spacesuits. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.